And now, Tucson's Hispanic Voices with Steve Nunez.
We're devastated. Justice Ginsburg leaves behind an incredible legacy that not many people leave behind. She's really improved the lives of every single woman in this country and every single family in this country.
Mourners of all ages, women and men, mothers and fathers, some with their daughters and sons, of all races, white, black, Latino, all week long gathered outside the United States Supreme Court to pay their respects to a woman, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's inspired a generation. They left flowers and messages in chalk written near the courthouse steps, and they lit candles, some adorned with an image of RBG, similar to La Virgen de Guadalupe. To many, especially women, she was a living saint, devoted to empowering and fighting for women's civil liberties, women's protections, and sex discrimination, including same-sex marriage. The late justice, known as the notorious RBG, died at 87. Her life's legacy should live for generations, but her death and a replacement appointee who could turn back the clock and threaten that legacy has turned into a rallying cry for people to vote and protect the equality she fought so hard to achieve. In honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, let's celebrate Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her life, and pay tribute to the champion of justice and women's rights who also paved a path for all women to achieve, including Latinas like Leticia Marquez, a U of A law school grad, and the first Latina from Tucson to argue a case before the United States Supreme Court. Good morning and welcome to Tucson's Hispanic Voices. I'm Steve Nunez. My goal is to give voice to Hispanics by bringing diversity into the conversation. You know, we've all been through a tragic moment in our lives in which we'll always remember the moment it happened, where we were, and the heartfelt feeling of sadness. Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death had that impact on me personally and millions of other Americans, especially women. So in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, my guest today is Leticia Marquez. She's the daughter of Mexican immigrants. Today, Marquez is a supervising attorney with the Federal Public Defender's Office and head of the Tucson office. Marquez received her law degree from the University of Arizona's James E. Rogers College of Law. On October 9th, 2012, Marquez argued Ryan versus Gonzalez, a capital case dealing with the competency to assist counsel in the United States Supreme Court. She was only the 16th Latina to argue before the highest court in the land.
Leticia Marquez, welcome to Tucson's Hispanic Voices. It's an honor to have you as my guest.
Thank you, Steve. I'm really excited about doing your show today.
Well, we're excited to have you on, so thank you for spending the time to be with us today. Here's my first question. You argued a capital case in the U.S. Supreme Court in front of the 9 justices, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Walk us through that experience, starting with what was going through your mind as you ascended the steps of the United States Supreme Court and then stood before the justices to present your case. Lay it out for us in layman's terms for those of us who are not attorneys.
It's a really great experience to argue in the U.S. Supreme Court. Very few of us get to do that, and obviously it's the pinnacle of any attorney's career. You don't walk up the steps anymore, I'm assuming it's 9/11 procedures. So instead, you sort of go around the building and do a little less sort of exciting walk in and check in with security guards and things like that. But what is really neat is that they take you into what's called a lawyer's lounge. And obviously, everything in the U.S. Supreme Court is historic and beautiful, and the lawyer's lounge is no different. It's where all the lawyers who are going to argue that day and co-counsel gather before arguments, and the clerk of the court, who is dressed in a morning suit. A lot of people would recognize a morning suit as like a penguin suit or one of those outfits that people wear at weddings with tails. And so the clerk of the court comes in and gives us a complete rundown of how it's going to go and what we're doing. But so then you just wait there, and then at a designated time, the clerk escorts you in to into the courtroom. And by the time you go in, it's sort of at the last minute, everybody else is seated. And, you know, for me, there were colleagues that I've known across the country in the galley and beyond the gates. And my, of course, my family was there. And so it was a very, very sort of sobering walk. And you sit at these tables until your case is called. They all come out from behind curtains all at the same time when the clerk announces that the court is in session. At the side, there are, So the justices are right in front of you, and then at the side of you on either side are more chairs, and one is the media sort of section, and that's where Nina Totenberg and you know, CNN and other places media sits. And then on the other side is where special guests of the justices sit, their wives, their friends, you know, whomever they've invited. So that's sort of what it looks like when you walk in. And then they just start. In my particular case, it was different because they combined two cases, and the issue in those cases were whether or not a person sentenced to death in their final appeals in federal court, and they're called habeas proceedings, has the right to be competent in order to assist in their appeal. And my client has been incompetent for a number of years and unable to assist throughout the proceedings in district court. And so we appealed it up through the Ninth Circuit and then up from there to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the case that it was paired with was another defendant. And so so there was five of us who argued, including Tom Horn, if you remember Tom Horn, who decided to argue for the state. And I was the fifth and last person to argue because of that's just the way they combine the cases. And so my argument was very short because it was combined and they shortened everybody's time in order not to be there forever. And so that's sort of what happened. We lost 9-0, so we went down in flames. We had won all the way through, and the Ninth Circuit, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the Ninth Circuit's finding that he did have a right to be competent. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, you don't need your client for anything at this point. So that's sort of what happened. There was a ton of work that I didn't appreciate that happens before you argue. Everybody, as soon as your case goes to the Supreme Court, you get contacted by every big firm, high power firm in the country wanting to argue your case or take over your case. You get media starting to contact you. You get people, other criminal defense attorneys or criminal defense attorney interest groups contacting you, wanting to get involved in the case through what's called amicus briefs. Briefs that are, amicus is Latin for friend. So basically it's a procedure where somebody who has an interest in your case and wants to side with you, but wants to provide sort of why that this your case affects them in order to support your case. So then you have a lot of people wanting to file amicus briefs, and you don't always want them. Mostly you do want support, but sometimes the positions that they're taking undermine what you're doing, or you don't think it's, you know, good for your client at this point. And so you have to sort of coordinate amicus briefs, media, other firms. And then, of course, there's all the briefing that happens running up to that time. And so it's a huge task, and although I really enjoyed it, I don't think I would ever do it again.
Wow.
That's my conclusion.
Did RBG ask you any questions?
She may have asked one, but she really didn't. She wasn't the justice that was most, that was the what we call the hottest one on the bench. It was Sotomayor asked me a lot of questions. Alito asked me questions. Robert and Justice Kennedy and Scalia asked me questions. They were the main ones that were sort of what did the justices do, and the same thing with the circuit judges is they argue among themselves through you. So they'll like ask questions, pointed questions, sort of addressing the other justice through you. And so that's sort of how that goes down.
What was her demeanor? Did she ever look at you or give you any cues?
You know, she what I thought was interesting is that she looked around a lot. She, while we were arguing, it was a little distracting for me, but she was very aware of who was in the room. And I think I took away that she really enjoyed the arguments, as opposed to someone like Thomas, who leans back in his chair during arguments and kind of looks up at the ceiling. It's very odd and could be somewhat distracting. He looks like he really doesn't want to be there. And in fact, I think he has made comments like that he doesn't think arguments make a difference. And I think he's only asked one or two questions in the past 20, 30 years, you know, ever. But she, on the other hand, you know, she's tiny. And so it's a little hard to see her. You kind of just see her head, whereas the other justices, you see more, you know, their shoulders, their chest. And she definitely was scanning the room. And, you know, she had her ponytail with a little scrunchie. It was, it's very sort of, you know, you sort of connect like, oh, she has a scrunchie. I have a scrunchie. So, yeah, she didn't ask a lot of questions, but she was very present.
When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Leticia Marquez, supervising attorney with the Federal Public Defender's Office, and pay tribute to the life of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, an icon of empowering and fighting for women's rights.
You're listening to Tucson's Hispanic Voices with Steve Nunez. We'll be right back. And now, Tucson's Hispanic Voices with Steve Nunez.
I, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States. A system of justice will be the richer for diversity of background and experience. It will be the poorer in terms of appreciating what is at stake and the impact of its judgments if all of its members are cast from the same mold.
Welcome back to Tucson's Hispanic Voices. I'm Steve Nunez. In honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, we are celebrating the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and paying tribute to the champion of justice for women's rights, who also paved a path for all women to achieve, including Latinas like Leticia Marquez, a U of A law school grad, and the first Latina from Tucson to argue a case before the United States Supreme Court.
What does Ruth Bader Ginsburg's legacy mean to you as a woman?
Well, it means everything. I mean, she was a trailblazer, is a trailblazer for all women, regardless of you know, color, race, ethnicity. She opened the doors for all of us in terms of what women lawyers are, who women lawyers are, what our potential is. The strides that women have made in the law all rest on her shoulders and the shoulders of women like her who pioneered, you know, basically women's ability to be in the law. I have I do capital cases, and in my office, the people who do capital cases are in what's called the capital habeas unit. And up until recently, you know, we have about 20-some lawyers, 24, 25. And up until recently, we only had one man, one male lawyer. All of them are women, incredibly bright, incredibly good writers, who are handling, you know, basically the toughest cases that you can have, which are capital cases. And so were it not for RBG, we wouldn't have these incredible women, you know, litigating on behalf of you know, the people who society has deemed disposable.
Were you disappointed that you didn't get the outcome that you wanted, or that maybe even RBG did not side with your argument or case?
Yeah, of course I was disappointed, because I feel like we were in the on the right side of humanity. I mean, to say that you don't need your client for to be lucid and participating in his defense of his life just is wrong on so many levels. But I understand the law, and how I knew it was a long shot, because the case, that the win that we were trying to support and that we were trying to carry through to the U.S. Supreme Court from the Ninth Circuit was not on firm legal principles, which is always problematic when you go to the Supreme Court. So we knew it was a long shot. We knew it was going to be, you know, if they sided with us, it was going to be much more of an equity sort of fairness, emotional, on an emotional level, and that's always a long shot.
I know the seriousness of your capital case, but was there a moment when you just stopped, took a deep breath, reflected on your upbringing from your parents moving from Mexico to L.A. and then to Bisbee, Arizona, and then tell yourself, wow, I've made it. And I'm the first Latina from Tucson to argue a case in front of the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely not just one time during this process, but several times when I was like, almost in awe of, you know, how amazing my journey has been, and how unlikely, I suppose, it is in light of where my family came from and where we started. Definitely, the day of, I took some moments to reflect while I was getting dressed in my hotel room, to pray, to thank my ancestors, to invoke my ancestors, to, you know, just be very spiritual in that moment. But it wasn't just that day. It was, you know, moments leading up to it. And frankly, throughout my life, I've, you know, statistically, I'm not supposed to be where I am. And it's not because I'm smarter or better or, you know, or anything else than a lot of people with my background. Some of it was a lot of hard work. Some of it was some luck. You know, some of it was perhaps divine intervention. I'm not sure.
Well, congratulations. We are all so very proud of you.
Thank you.
Let me read a quote from RBG and get your reaction on it. Here's her quote. What's the difference between a bookkeeper in New York's district, which my mother was, and a Supreme Court justice? The difference is one generation, end quote. How does this resonate with you and your life?
You know, that's such a good quote. I hadn't heard that before, but it resonates with my life, because my mom came to this country when she was very young. She was about 16 years old, and she came alone. And she decided, she was from, her family's from Cananea, Sonora, just, you know, not that far from here. And she looked around and saw that there wasn't anything for her there, and she just decided to come to the United States and open up her own path, and came to Tucson. And interestingly enough, she was the, she got a job as the nanny for the people who owned El Charro at that time in the 50s, I think, and they sponsored her immigration, because that's sort of how it used to be. And then from there, she went to San Diego and worked there and cleaning houses and babysitting and being a nanny, and moved to Los Angeles and did the same thing, you know, worked cleaning houses, and ultimately landed a job, you know, quote, a good job at UCLA as a custodian, and worked there until they moved to Bisbee. And she's a very smart woman, and every bit as smart as my sister and I, and could have easily, given opportunity and given a different set of circumstances, been anything she wanted to be, and had and has way more courage than I could ever have. And so I completely agree with that quote. You know, I think it's 100% true in my life.
When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Leticia Marquez, supervising attorney with the Federal Public Defender's Office, and pay tribute to the life of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, an icon of empowering and fighting for women's rights.
If you could change one thing about the Constitution, what would it be and why?
I would add an Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution.
In support of Tucson's Hispanic Voices, please make sure to support our sponsors, MPG Tire and Auto, going the extra mile for you and your vehicle, Nova Home Loans, the best combination of rates, fees, and services since 1980, the Law Office of Natalie H. Haywood, she's more than just a criminal defense attorney, she's an advocate for human rights, and theme music composed by local guitarist Gabriel Francisco Romo.
You're listening to Tucson's Hispanic Voices with Steve Nunez. We'll be right back. And now, Tucson's Hispanic Voices with Steve Nunez.
When I'm sometimes asked, when will there be enough? And I say, when there are nine. People are shocked. But there have been nine men and nobody ever raised a question about that.
That was one of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's most famous quotes when asked how many women should be on the U.S. Supreme Court. Welcome back to Tucson's Hispanic Voices. I'm Steve Nunez. For me personally, the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg is one of those moments in life in which I'll always remember where I was the moment I learned of her passing. RBG had an impact on millions of other Americans. She was a hero and a role model who gave voice to women, opened doors to more freedoms, and at the same time, she provided protections to maintain that equality. In honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, my guest today is Leticia Marquez. She's a supervising attorney with the Federal Public Defender's Office. In 2012, Marquez became the first Latina from Tucson to argue a capital case before the United States Supreme Court.
Both you and your sister, Rosemary Marquez, who was appointed a federal judge in 2011, have both become highly successful attorneys. What inspired you both to pursue law?
So I was interested in law before she was, and she was always pre-med. She wanted to be a doctor. And when we started at the University of Arizona together, I started taking political science and Mexican studies classes. Those were my majors in Mexican history. And so she took organic chemistry and who knows what else, things that sounded like Chinese to me. And so when we were at the U of A, it was like 1986, 87 when we first started there. And, you know, we were pretty poor. And one of the things that we did was we sort of took some of the same classes, the classes that you sort of had to take to fulfill whatever, you know, whatever history or whatever social studies or whatever kind of backgrounds that you needed for your degree. And so some of those, she would take like political science with me, and in order to save money on books, because so we should just share a set of books, because as you know, books were hundreds of dollars per class.
Yes.
And so she got a lot of poli-sci and other credits along the way, and at some point she wasn't getting into, you know, sometimes it's notorious that you can't get into the classes you want, and along the way there were some classes that she was having trouble getting into, and she just decided, you know, one of her counselors, she was talking to one of her counselors, and she told her counselor, you know, I really need to get going. I can't be in school this long. I can't afford to be in school, you know, this long. And the counselor said, well, why don't you just apply to law school? You have credits. You could, you know, do it. And so she did and got in, and that's sort of where that went. And then I got into law school a couple years later. So we were in law school at the U of A at the same time. She was a third year and I was a first year. But that's sort of where that went.
How amazing is it, though, that you are the supervising attorney for the Federal Public Defender's Office, and she's a federal judge. Did you ever think all the stars would align for both you and your sister to be so successful?
No, I never saw this in sort of, the, as you said, the stars for us. I always knew I was going to be an attorney. I didn't know what kind of attorney. And as soon as she decided to go to law school, I knew she was going to be an attorney. But I didn't really see us being, you know, in the positions that we're in. You know, the judgeship for her was a very difficult process and something that I think had somebody told her it was going to be this difficult, I don't think she would have gone through it again. And there's lots of articles written on how hard it was to get her nomination through. In fact, Obama had to renominate her. I think he nominated her two or three times, and she waited 1,087 or 85 days. From the nomination to her confirmation, which was one of the records, really. And that was all due to, you know, she was caught in the middle of a political fight, which, you know, has been sort of the status quo in our country the last few years. But no, you know, to answer your question, we were taught to work hard and be ethical and honest, but not necessarily, you know, oh, I want to be a judge and I'm going to do everything from now, from the time I graduate till then, or like strategically plan it. I know people who do that. And I've always thought, you know, that's sort of sad because you're not really doing what you love and what you love. Instead, you're doing every, you know, you're sort of trying to check boxes on your way to something. And if, what happens if you don't get there? You know, are you going to be unhappy for the rest of your life? And so I think we both do what we love. She's always said that when she was a criminal defense lawyer that she loved her job. And, you know, obviously in what I do, we have really hard days, especially when we lose a client. But we have a lot of really rewarding moments, too.
What's happy hour or even Thanksgiving dinner like? Do you ever argue a case in front of her? Do you bounce back and forth?
You know,
Be honest.
I'm not allowed to argue in front of her. And neither is her husband's also a lawyer, and neither is her husband, due to conflicts and ethics and stuff like that. So we're really careful. My office has a screen, so I don't really supervise the cases that she is that she presides over. I don't approve funding for those cases, and I don't consult on those cases. I don't brainstorm on them. And she doesn't really talk about cases with me or with her husband. In fact, even like the most minor things, I remember reading about some high profile case in the paper, and it's, you know, it mentioned her name as the judge, and I called her because I think it was like an environmental thing, case that was hot at the moment, and I called her and said, I didn't know you were the judge on that, and she's like, oh yeah. So we really have tried not to talk about those kinds of cases. Her cases and my cases, because, you know, it's better not to.
I figured as much. I just wanted to ask you that and see how you would answer.
We do talk politics. We do talk cases. You know, sometimes when they have nothing to do with us, you know, maybe I'll send her an email about, you know, some Native American jurisdictional case that I find really interesting, like the case that was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court last year from Oklahoma, which I was shocked at who wrote the opinion, and I was shocked at the outcome, which was great. And so I would send her that, or she sees some case, you know, from somewhere that she thinks might interest me or her husband, and she shoots us. So we do talk law. But not specifics, yeah.
When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Leticia Marquez, supervising attorney with the Federal Public Defender's Office, and pay tribute to the life of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, an icon of empowering and fighting for women's rights.
For so long, women were silent, thinking there was nothing you could do about it. But now the law is on the side of women or men who encounter harassment. And that's a good thing.
In support of Tucson's Hispanic Voices, please make sure to support our sponsors, MPG Tire and Auto, going the extra mile for you and your vehicle. Nova Home Loan, the best combination of rates, fees, and services since 1980. The Law Office of Natalie H. Haywood. She's more than just a criminal defense attorney. She's an advocate for human rights. And theme music, composed by local guitarist Gabriel Francisco Romo.
You're listening to Tucson's Hispanic Voices with Steve Nunez. We'll be right back. Now, Tucson's Hispanic Voices with Steve Nunez.
I ask no favor for my sex. All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off our necks.
Welcome back to Tucson's Hispanic Voices. I'm Steve Nunez. In honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, we are celebrating the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and paying tribute to the real champion of justice and women's rights who also paved a path for all women to achieve, including Latinas like Leticia Marquez, a U of A law school grad and the first Latina from Tucson to argue a case before the United States Supreme Court.
We know RBG was known for her perseverance and grit. Where do you think that comes from? Can you teach that, or is it a product of your experience growing up?
I don't know if you could teach that. I give a lot of talk to high school students and young lawyers coming into the practice and advice on how to succeed or how to practice. And one of the things that I do say is hard work. You have to have a good work ethic in whatever you do. You know, for me, it comes from my parents. My dad worked construction, and my mom, as I mentioned, was a custodian, and they worked really hard. And I saw how they never, you know, they worked hard at home, they worked hard at their work, and that's all I knew. And so I don't know that you could teach it. You can suggest it. You can tell people your story and how you worked. But honestly, I don't know if you could teach it.
As we all know, RBG was white but faced anti-Semitism. How has being a Latina affected your practice?
Well, it's certainly better now, but it definitely is a challenge, had been a challenge. Starting even from when I went to the U of A, you know, you have all the 101 classes, and the 101 classes at that time were in auditoriums where, you know, be 500 people. I don't know how many hundreds of people. And the way I could find my sister was I would look at all the dark hair, which were not very many. You know, I'd walk in and like, okay, where's the dark-haired person? And so that's where I would find her. And then a bunch of us mechistas found each other, and that was sort of our support. Honestly, I think we were the only Mexicans there. And it was people like Ruben Reyes, who you probably know him. He's
the first vato of Tucson. Yeah.
Yeah. It was Ruben and you know, Ana Ma, who's gone on to do amazing things. And so that was sort of our mecha class at the U of A, and my sister, me, and a few others. And so that support helped. But yeah, then it was difficult. And then when you start practicing law, it's a male, white dominated field, and walk into a room and you kind of feel like you're on display, especially, you know, 20, 5 years ago when I started. And you get underestimated a lot. There's assumptions made when you're of color, and especially when you're a woman of color, that you're not as smart or you're not, you know, as good as John Smith, for example. And so sort of two sides to a coin. Sometimes it works in your favor when you're underestimated, and sometimes you have to fight to get the recognition that you deserve. So, yeah, it's been a challenge for sure.
Let's talk local elections. How important are they? Talk about the importance of the three branches of government and how important the judiciary is right now, especially after the passing of RBG.
So I'm a Democrat, put that up front. And I think the Republicans have a number of years known, have gotten it right in terms of the importance of local elections. They make sure that their people vote ballot up as opposed to ballot down. And the small races have been key to their success in taking over the Congress and the Senate. So they've gotten majorities in the state senates, and those state senators and representatives have then gone on to map out the political map and secured Republican-friendly districts throughout the country. And they were brilliant in doing that. And we have not stressed the importance of local elections. So I guess the answer to your question of local elections is that they're incredibly important to us locally and also to the decisions that are made on the national level.
I'll confess, I'll do the same when it comes to even voting for local judges. I'll just vote right down the line. And sometimes it's just name familiarity, as opposed to really understanding who are the activist judges or the rulings and their patterns of rulings.
Mm.
And I think that's wrong, but sometimes we tend to do that.
Another way the Republicans have gotten this right is that the the evangelicals and all these people have held their nose, knowing that how critical the appointment of judges, federal judges, is to our daily lives. And they know that Trump, for example, is going to appoint the people they want, regardless of whether they agree with him on anything else. Because anything else that he does right now or that any president does right now, for the most part, can be fixed later or rolled back or, you know, whatever. But federal judges are appointed for life. They shape our lives on a daily basis. They decide health care. They decide women's health. They decide immigration. They do it for decades. And the Republicans know that and understand the huge importance of that. And they're fighting, tooth and nail in order to make sure that they get the justices in that they want. And Trump has appointed more judges in the past 3.5 years than Obama did in 8 years on the bench, because he was just blocked, as you could see from my sister's story, was blocked every step of the way by the Senate.
Speaking of rollback, do you still believe in a system when one woman's death can set us so far back in time?
It's been a really traumatizing weekend.
It really has. It truly has. And on so many levels for so many different people.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just all the different, women's health, health care, immigration, DACA, just so many hundreds of thousands of lives that are going to be affected by the death of this woman. And and her replacement. It's unbelievable how depressing and scary it is to be at this crossroads right now.
Before we go, I have a rapid fire of questions to ask. It's all in fun and all about being a Tucsonan.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
I am.
Okay. After a hard day's work in court, what's your go-to for an adult beverage to help you unwind? Michelada or margarita?
Michelada.
Really? From where?
I really like the michelada at, you know, and I still don't know their name, the boxes.
Oh.
They're right there next to the mercado.
Oh, yeah, the little boxes. There's a little bar there, right?
Little bar there. And it's super to hang out there, especially if it's not too hot in the evenings. And they make a good michelada if you ask them.
I'm going to have to try that place. All right, St. Mary's Tortillas or Alejandro's?
I'm going to have to go off your list and go Anita's.
You know, I agree with you. Barrio Anita makes the best tortillas, but they also make the best red chili carne burritos. You agree?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
I am at Anita's every Christmas Eve at 7 a.m. getting my tortillas for Christmas Eve dinner.
Nice. Shout out to Anita's.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, in between court cases, where's your go-to spot for lunch? Mercado or American Eats?
Mercado.
What do you order there? Do you go to Sace?
Sace, yeah. You know, what I want to order is, you know, either enchiladas or an enchilada-style burrito, but they have a really good salad, like a really good Mexican-style salad.
Okay, I got you on that. I do like their horchata.
Yes, they have really good horchata.
Okay, Tucson Meet Yourself or the Book Festival?
Tucson Meet Yourself.
Arizona Men's Basketball or Arizona Women's Basketball?
You know, Arizona Men's Basketball, but...
Ooh, I stumped you on this one.
But I've been getting into the women's basketball the last couple of years.
Yeah, especially after they won the WNIT championship in 2019.
They're super fun.
They are fun. It is a lot of fun to watch exactly what Adia Barnes has been able to do to revitalize this basketball program. And it's neat to see the women doing so well.
That's amazing.
Leticia Marquez, I want to thank you for being my guest on Tucson's Hispanic Voices. You are always welcomed on this show. Stay safe and healthy, and God bless you for all of the good work and representation you are doing for our community.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, and congratulations to you, Steve, on your program, and continue to our people forward, and si se puede.
Si se puede. I agree with you. And more importantly, we all need to vote.
Yes.
Please,
absolutely.
Tell the people right now how important it is to vote. Quickly.
Vote like your life depends on it, because it really, truly does.
Amen. And once again, thank you for being on Tucson's Hispanic Voices.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great one.
In honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, Tucson's Hispanic Voices paid tribute to the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a true champion for women's rights and protections, and a true trailblazer who paved the way for so many women like our guest today, Leticia Marquez, the supervising attorney with the Federal Public Defender's Office. Marquez is the first Latina from Tucson to argue a case before the United States Supreme Court.
In my lifetime, I expect to see 3, 4, perhaps even more women on the high court bench, women not shaped from the same mold, but of different complexions.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg was one of 3 women justices serving on the U.S. Supreme Court when she died September 18th at the age of 87. May she rest in power. In support of Tucson's Hispanic Voices, please make sure to support our sponsors. MPG Tire and Auto, going the extra mile for you and your vehicle. Nova Home Loans, the best combination of rates, fees, and services since 1980. The Law Office of Natalie H. Haywood. She's more than just a criminal defense attorney, she's an advocate for human rights. And theme music, composed by local guitarist Gabriel Francisco Romo. That does it for this week's Tucson's Hispanic Voices. Tune in every Saturday from 10 to 11 right here on KBOY 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Nunez. See you on the radio next week.